This episode of the Braving Business Podcast is sponsored by, well, me. I'm PJ Benoit, and I've been in the domestic and international logistics space for over 30 years. If you need any assistance with transportation or logistics, my team and I will jump at the chance to help. Whether it be parcel shipments, e-commerce, pallets and freight, full truckload, international air and ocean, imports, exports, warehousing and distribution, or really anything under the logistics umbrella, we got you covered. For more details, please go to shipwithpj.com. That's shipwithpj.com. Reach out to me there. Mention you found me on this podcast for a special surprise. And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business Podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
Oh, you're back to wearing a hat. I actually got to see the top of your head. One rare moment. Just like that.
I know. I'm just airing out my...
It's like an eclipse. You don't see it very often. It's beautiful. And then you just got to move on.
I'm just trying to brand. That's all I'm trying to do, buddy. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I could do the tattoo on my forehead, but...
You could. We've talked about it. I don't know why you're not doing that.
I'm just not dedicated, I guess. I'm sorry.
I guess not. Yeah.
So what's going on, my friend? How are you doing?
I am recovering. I took a nice spill off my bike a few days ago. Yes, I want to say that I was avoiding a child or a pet. I crashed to save a life, but in fact, I crashed because I'm a fool.
And
was turning without my hands, which I like to do, and I'm usually pretty good at. But apparently all it takes is one time when you're not so good at it. And bad things happen. So you've suffered.
Pretty bruised. You suffered a sports related injury.
I did a sports related injury. I like that. I'm an athlete, and I suffered a sports related injury. Never mind that I caused it to myself.
Yeah, this is why I haven't had one in decades. So, Jeff, how are you doing, buddy? Do you have any sports related injuries that we need to know about? We gotta talk.
I actually went out and shot a 75 today at the golf course.
Wow. I do that.
I think we can end the interview right here. If we're going to be talking about anybody shooting 75, I have not shot 75 except for a 9-hole.
Yeah.
And an executive course of that.
I was going to say, you're supposed to say, what'd you shoot on the back nine?
Yeah. I was going to say, I think 75 is my average when I do putt. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Jeff is kind of in the world of golf though, just so you know. So let's learn a little bit about Mr. Jeff Gardner, who is our illustrious, I'm going to throw that word out, guest today. Jeff is a dedicated entrepreneur in the world of golf gear and a PGA award-winning innovator. But you see, Jeff didn't just walk out on a golf course with an idea that everyone immediately embraced. He created a product, the Alignment Ball Marker, that helps the ordinary golfer improve their game without breaking the bank, a product that turns heads and probably annoyed some purists at the 2022 PGA show, where, for the record, he snagged the title for Best New Product. A self-proclaimed golf gear geek, thanks for making me say that, Tal. He's faced off with USGA rule books, a cease and desist trademark squabble, and the wild west of international manufacturing. Jeff's story proves that nothing gets in the way of a guy with vision, a lot of patience, and a refusal to quit. Jeff's story is part Rocky Balboa, part MacGyver, and 100% about grit, guts, and a whole lot of golf. While he's busy reinventing the game and probably annoying purists along the way, Jeff's also cooking up his next big ideas. This episode isn't about golf, or at least not just about golf, but it's about coming up with a big idea, figuring out how to make it come to life, taking your shot, refusing to give up, and being willing to risk failure. Jeff, you are in great company here. Thank you for joining the Braving Business Podcast.
My pleasure to be here, fellas.
Jeff, thanks for being with us. I love stories like this, a story of someone that invented something that annoyed people. I kind of did that too. And so did PJ, actually. We both have experience inventing things that were out of the ordinary. I was involved in the creation of the pay-by-cell phone for parking. People were used to using their their coins, obviously, to pay for parking. But the real big idea at the time was credit card machines. Yeah. And we came up with something totally different than that. And there were a lot of people that thought we were idiots. And PJ invented fitting jeans, right? So it's always interesting to talk to someone that brought something to the market that annoyed some people. I love that. But let's start with, you know, what was the moment you realized that you had this idea and it wasn't just a passing thought, but something you felt, man, this would make a difference. I need to bring it to life. You know, was there a spark or something that told you, I got to do this?
It all starts with, like you were just saying, starts with a problem. And if you don't have a problem to begin with, then you don't have anything to solve. And I was a really terrible golfer. I was at 24 handicap. I shot, you know, 100 to 115. And I made it a mission to be better at golf. And the more I played, there's sort of a process when you're putting. And what I realized was, like, I could simplify that process if I could figure out, you know what I mean? Like, how do I eliminate this dance where you have to hover over your golf ball and adjust it? You're using it as an aligning device. And then you got to go back and then you have to look at it because you don't have visual perspective. I was like, what can I do to simplify this down and make it easier and more effective? And that's the day that I came up with that idea. I went home, I went into the barn, and I started making the first prototype out of a block of wood, a roofing nail, and a magnet. And, you know, from there, I built another one. And then I built another one. And I just kept refining and refining and refining and then talking to the USGA to figure out what the rules were and how do the rules pertain to the product that I'm developing. And it was like the first five that I had created were no good because they were too large. Anything that was greater than 2 inches by 2 inches by 2 inches was an illegal aligning device. So I'm like, Jesus Christ, I just spent all this time developing all of these different variations. And they're like, nope, no good. See you later. And then you go back to the drawing board and you're like, how can I refine this? How can I condense it? How can I make it as effective but smaller? And just sort of going through that process of making it conform to the rules of golf and still work.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. Did you know that you had to go to the USGA or was that like, what was that like really to go to a governing body of something and say, hey, you know, I'm kind of a hack out here, but I think I got something that's going to make everything better for everyone.
They could care less. So like, you know, it was sort of like, I didn't want to create a product that I was going to sell if it wasn't going to be used in every facet of the game. So if it was just an aid for practicing, that didn't really interest me. I wanted it to be able to be used in tournaments and, you know, all forms of golf. And, you know, like when I went to them, you know, I found out pretty quick that it was very simple. It was like, these are the dimensional sizes that you have to work within. And then it was figuring out other rules of golf thereafter and how I would conform the product to those rules as well.
Very cool. Very cool. So it's
interesting. No, I just want to jump in. I mean, I think it's really interesting that you believed that if you just developed something that would be used for practice, it wouldn't have the impact.
The marketability.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I played baseball and also my son played baseball, and there are a lot of tools that are developed that are purely for practice. You don't bring them into a game. And a lot of the challenge tends for, especially for kids, is to be able to bring it into a game and be able to move away from the tool or the aid and be able to carry it into the game. And it's very challenging. And a lot of what doesn't work in my experience, and I've also coached, is that the difference between what the device or the tool allows you to do in practice and the speed of the game or the way the game is played almost renders that tool useless in the real world. So it's really interesting that you had that perspective.
Well, it was also for the marketability of it, right? If I'm going to create something that's only going to be an aid, then I'm only going after people that would just use it as a practice device rather than everybody who plays, you know what I mean? It's everybody who plays golf, not everybody who plays golf practices golf. So like, I've got a good buddy. We actually have a bet going on right now. He bet me this year that he'd be a lower handicap than me next year. And it was the easiest bet I've ever taken in my life because he doesn't like to practice. He doesn't practice. He's never going to beat me at the bet. But it's like, there are certain people, all they do is just go out and play. Practice isn't even in consideration for the way that they play golf.
Oh, that's kind of awesome. So yeah. you go through the whole, this whole rigmarole. You talk to the USGA. You conform to their guidelines and to making sure that it's something that's applicable. What was it like to see actual common folk, fellow hackers out there trying your product for the first time? And how did it feel knowing that something you created was helping them approve their game?
Well, what's great was like after I had had my patent done, and I had done my 3D prints, I got in the car, I drove down to Florida to shoot video, take pictures, and then I brought a bunch of like beta samples with me that were flawed. Like they would break because they were 3D printed in layers and the two spikes would snap off. But regardless, I went to a course and I did like a demo thing where I was like, people were going out to play and I'm like, hey, I'm going to give you this. I'd like you to try it out. And when you come back, you can give it back to me. And the most flattering part of that was, I think I got like a couple back. Everybody took them. They're like, we're not, one guy actually came back and told me how great it was, but like everybody else just ran away with them because they liked them. They didn't want to give them back. And like, I was stationed at like the beginning of the course rather than like where everybody finished and left. So they were like, so that was a very flattering moment where I'm like, oh, if they didn't like it, they would have thrown it at me and said, this thing's a piece of junk. And, but I really did enjoy that, early on.
So you had a number of unexpected twists, including a cease and desist order.
Oh, yeah.
Not fun.
No, never fun.
Tell me about that and what did it teach you and how did it impact how you approached the journey from there?
I had a total absolute meltdown. I mean, I was, the decision to go to the PGA show was super last minute. I had 3 weeks to design my booth, get everything ready, get everything manufactured, produced in the car, drive down, set up, do all this stuff. I go down there specifically to win best new product. Achieve that goal, totally burnt out, got to drive back from Florida. I get home on like Sunday night after the show. The show ended on Friday. And like Monday, the first call I get, because like I win best new product. I'm like, we're off to the races. I'm gonna make $1 million. And the first call I get is from a guy who's in the industry and his buddy was at the show and took a picture of my booth and sent it to him. And he goes, I have a trademark that's very similar to your logo. And I don't want to have to sue you, but I will if you don't change it. And I'm like, everything I created has this icon on it. All the product that I manufactured, my hats, my shirts, everything that I had just done for my displays, my website, my social. So I'm like, I literally like lost my head for probably a couple hours. And then I realized, like I talked to a couple of lawyers and they're like, it's 50-50. Both logos look very similar. One of them predated mine by a couple of years. And he had like a local trademark or something like that. And I just said, screw it. I'm just going to redo it right now. And literally I didn't go to sleep until I had redeveloped that logo. And then within 2 days I think I was back in my car to drive back to Florida to reshoot everything that I had just done. And because I was like, you know what? I'm not going to start off behind the eight ball. I'll just suck it up. It sucks. Persevere. And I'm a workhorse. And, I'll say, like, I'm never the smartest guy in the room, but I'll outwork you 10 days out of seven. I mean, I'm relentless in that. And it's just because I'm a super competitive person, you know, within myself as well as, you know, other people.
Yeah. No, I love the tenacity. So,
yeah,
you know, that being a stumbling block right off the get-go, what's the story of the single toughest decision you've had to make to keep the business alive? And what did that teach you about yourself?
Realizing that, you know, like I had that expectation that I had already achieved some level of success by winning best new product at the PGA show. And then I realized that nobody cared because nobody knew. And, you know, like you think that you're going to have this great success off of something like that, and it didn't happen. And I realized pretty quickly that it was all about, you've got to go out and market your product. So then I looked at, you know, all the traditional medias, and all of those traditional medias, Golf Digest, Golf Magazine, Golf Channel, you know, all these traditional medias that sort of own the space, you know, they want $25,000 to $50,000 to do anything, to have a conversation with you. And then it's like, you know, you do get to a point where you're like, well, am I going to be able to make this happen? Or do I just try to bail now, pull the chute, and sell it off to somebody? But when I thought about it from that perspective, you know, I had invested so much time and effort. I mean, I couldn't even tell you the amount of physical time that I spent building the products, redeveloping stuff, you know what I mean? Doing all the design work, writing my own patent. You know, I'd spent, you know, 10,000 hours in the span of a year and a half. And what is that worth? It's only worth what somebody's willing to pay me for it. So going and finding somebody to just buy my concept or buy my product and then make it their own, I would never be able to recoup what I had invested into it in terms of time. And I'm like, you've got to go out there and you've got to find a way to sell it and put a number, you know what I mean? Like nobody can evaluate it unless you have sales. So it's like, you just got to go out and you got to figure out how to make it sell. And that's what I started doing. I found Instagram was the best way to do it. And you know, that's sort of what I meant.
Yeah. Let me jump in. So we touched on a number of themes that I think are really going to resonate with members of the audience, whether they're inventors or they have a business that requires awareness, right? So it's you had a product that you took a long time to develop. You developed it with precision. You achieved the outcome you wanted to achieve with the product. That is, at best, 10% of the journey. And a lot of people that are in entrepreneurship fail to recognize that having a good idea or a good product is about 10%. It's not 50%. In my personal experience, I'd be curious whether you would agree with that. And the second half of my question is, okay, when you realize that having a good product only got you to the starting line, not even the midway point, the starting line, how did you keep yourself psyched up to continue the journey?
So I'm a graphic designer. That's what I went to school for. That's what I've done for the last, when did I graduate? 12 years ago or 13 years ago. So what I would do as a graphic designer is I would create all of the assets that people needed to market their products. That's what I did. I worked for an advertising agency. I was an art director. I was a freelance designer. I worked for small businesses, large corporations, nonprofits. So I already knew exactly what I had to do. It was just about, you know, in terms of getting excited to do it, is I knew that I could do it. And it was just about putting, you know, digging my feet in and, you know, putting the work in it was all about allocating time and effort. I mean, luckily for me, if, you know, while I was doing all this development stuff, I was living rent-free, managing a property while also doing freelance design work on the side. So I had sort of the liberty of time and effort to do the stuff that I needed to do, which was priceless, you know, in that respect.
Man. Okay. So first of all, I love the hustle, right? I love the all the paddles going all the time, right? Try to keep yourself going. That's amazing. So a lot of people, so let's get back to the game that you've just invested your entire future in. Sure. You know, golf by and large, except for when you're playing with me, is a game of patience and precision, right? What did you leech out of the sport to help shape the way that you think about life and business?
What have I taken out of golf?
Mm-hmm.
God, you know, I like the selfish sports, right? I don't like the team sports. You know, one thing about golf is you can't just go and blame somebody else for shooting a bad round, for missing a shot. And you really need to be committed to A, playing well, and B, playing horrible and persevering over that adversity. Today was probably the greatest, worst round I've ever shot in my life. I was minus one through 13 holes. I birdied 11, 12, 13, then went double, 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 and then par, par. And it was like, do I just give up after the first double? Do you give up after the second double? You know, like, obviously I was sort of angry, but it's like, no, you just keep pushing forward, and you got to find, it's got to be in you to get over those challenges, to keep going. And, you know, like, I find a lot of similarities with playing golf and running my business. It's like, they're not all going to be pars and birdies. Like, you're going to get, I'm dealing with bogeys right now, trying to get my product to be mainstream, which is incredibly difficult because it's so difficult to get into sort of those mainstream avenues if you don't have an incredible amount of dispensable cash. And it's like, how do I get around that, those challenges?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, probably most of the people who are listening who are entrepreneurs or inventors probably face that challenge. We've had some people that have come on the show and were successful in raising a lot of money. I've had the opportunity to raise some money in my career. At other times I had to scrape and do it on my own. And it's a very, very different ball game when you need to scrape. But you know what? Ingenuity tends to come when you kind of have to show it. And I'm curious, you know, given that you faced the challenge of having to essentially fund this on your own, I don't know if you pursued outside capital.
Nope.
So you didn't pursue outside capital. You decided to fund this on your own. Was there a number in your mind where you're like, look, if I don't, you know, I'm going to spend this much, and if it's not there by this point, I'm cutting and running? Or were you determined that you were going to see this through?
Didn't put a number. I was like, this is going to work. I'm fucking all, I was dead broke after that PGA show. I maxed out my credit cards. I had no money. I was like, but I had already done a production run, and I'm like, I got to get this thing to sell. And, you know, I started doing a bunch of stuff on social media, shooting my own content, posting it. And then I went out and I found, you know, just do your research. Right. So I went and found a bunch of golf influencers that had heavy followings of 250 to 500,000 followers. And I reached out to them and I'm like, hey, you know, what would it cost me to do something with you, you know, where you could, you know, put my product out to your audience? And I found a handful of guys that were really cheap. It was like $200. And, you know, like one of the first guys I worked with, you know, I created a piece of content, I handed it off to him. I did $10,000 in sales in one day. Mm. And, you know, when you get that sort of success, you're like, and that was sort of at the beginning, within, I'd say, the first 3 months. And then once you see that, you're like, that's the justification that you need to say, I can do so much more than that. I just need to work that much harder to position it because there's already interest there. Mm. You know, if I can move the product like that in a day, positioning it in the right spot, you just have to find those positions. You have to keep finding those positions and then getting your product into those positions to keep moving forward and you know, sort of keep having that success, which is really difficult. But there goes back to sort of that perseverance, right? It's like, are you going to give up or are you going to keep going? And before I even did this project, I mean, I had tried developing, I think, 3 different other things over the years, going back to when I was in college. And you always get to a point where you hit a wall. And there's always a barrier, and you have to ask yourself, is it worth it, you know, going forward or not?
I want to mention something I think is relevant. I think that you developed or invented something that helps people get better at something they love, something that maybe frustrates them also, but that they love or that they are committed to.
Yeah.
And you spoke at the very beginning of the interview about the fact that you were solving a problem. And if you don't have a problem to solve, you don't have a business. And I think that that's a hell of a statement. And I think it's certainly accurate when you're inventing something. It might be a little bit different in other lines of business, but I think by and large, it's correct. And it's certainly correct when you're inventing something. And if you're going to invent something and you're going to try to solve a problem, the best problem to solve is a problem where you help people get better at something they love. Okay. Because it's the kind of thing where if you help me get better at something I love, I'm going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you're not going to be able to spend your way to getting word of mouth that's going to be nearly as valuable to you as what people are going to say to each other. Word of mouth at the end of the day is what's really going to drive growth. You want to get the car on the road. You want to move it forward, and then you want to coast on people love the product and they're talking about it, right?
Yeah.
So did you factor in, I mean, as you developed this product, how much thought did you give to the fact that, hey, you know what? My thesis, Did you have a thesis for why you felt not only was this a good product, but it's a product that you were confident to the point of, by the way, I find this to be very common among successful people, that you did not have a number? I asked you that question. I fully anticipated your answer to be what it was. You did not have a number at which you would have stopped, because people who are successful, and we've seen this through dozens of episodes and now finishing season 3, the consistent theme is successful people don't quit. They don't quit. They don't see that as an option.
Yeah.
They might pivot. They might change, but they don't quit. So I found it compelling that you had that point of view, and not surprising. I also want to know, did you have a thesis where the reason you felt this was a business you intended to pursue till, I'm not going to say the bitter end, the successful end, is because you knew you were solving a problem that people were willing to spend money to solve?
I tell people, because I go to trade shows, you know, when I do my whole shtick where I explain the product, I tell them I built it for myself. Like the first thing was like, my first concept was, how can I simplify this process so that it's easier for me to play golf better? And then I figured if I liked it, everybody else would like it. And that's sort of the thesis started there, was like, I'm going to be better. I'm going to prove to myself that people are going to like this product.
Yeah. I think that
I like the product.
No, absolutely. I think that a lot of inventors start out with themselves in mind, right? Like, what can I create? You know, here's this problem. What can I create to make it better for me? And yeah. I think that's the impetus that a lot of inventors kind of glom onto and build really successful things with.
But you know what, PJ? I mean, I want to challenge, not obviously can't argue with success, but I want to challenge that as a singularly determinative thesis, because unless you know that you are very representative of the audience that you wish to sell to, you liking something or you being into something is not necessarily the right measure, right? No. But I think maybe in this instance, because you love something that lots of people love, which is golf, and you love what most people, and you, your goal was to do something that practically everyone that plays the sport aims to do, which is cut strokes down and play better, right? So the fact that you liked it probably applies here more so given the specifics of the problem you were solving. But I would be careful if you're out there in the audience and you're solving a problem that's not quite as
dynamic,
clear cut as how do you cut strokes off your golf game?
Yeah.
Make sure that you're not just doing something because you think it's a good idea.
Yeah,
true, true. I was just, I mentioned that to say, normally the inventor is always the first customer, right? They're building that for them. That's what I meant.
Fair enough. I don't challenge that at all. Let me ask you this. I want to ask you what you learned about human nature, not just from, you know, you had multiple moments here. The moment of someone calling you about a trademark, it sounds like he gave you a chance. He could have just sued. He didn't. Good for him.
That guy was super, turned out to be super nice, because one thing that he did allow me to do was to sell all the product that I had already produced.
Oh, that's awesome.
Go on, right?
Wow.
After, like, I begged him. I was like, dude, please. You know, like, I already sent stuff to Amazon, and I was like, you know, I was like, I don't even know how to solve that problem. And he was like, yeah, he's like, I'll give you a month, clear out everything so that nothing has that identifying mark on it, except the product that you have. Once you sell it out, you know, I'll give you 3 months to sell it out. And I ended up doing that.
Oh, very awesome. Cool. Very cool. So what did you learn about human nature from the moments in this journey that you've had, that and others?
It's all business, and you keep getting refreshers on it, right? So, you know, as great as my product is, and, you know, I'm pretty confident when I say that I think my product is the most innovative piece of in-game golf technology in the last 20 years, because the only thing I can think of was the introduction of the rangefinder, because you can use mine in play. That means nothing when it comes to editorial. And, you know, for me to be in Golf Digest, you know, I've tried incredibly hard to make contacts with people who know writers, to get it in front of them, sort of means nothing. At the end of the day, it's like, if you want to get a position in those places, you got to pay to play. And, like, one of the things that I tell people is, you could have the cure for cancer. If you don't have the advertising budget behind it, everybody's going to keep dying. It doesn't matter. Because the world has changed so much because of social media that, you know, everything has to have a dollar amount sort of applied to it. Like, that's the one thing that I've learned tremendously since I started this, you know, 2.5 years ago. Wow. Because I figured I could just sort of knock on the right door and they'd be like, sure, of course we're going to write about you and showcase this. And you find out that it's that not the case whatsoever. And that if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. And that's everywhere.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So we're winding down. So we kind of have a hard stop here, but wanted to ask, looking back at this journey that you've been on so far, is there a memory or maybe a milestone that you've passed that makes you feel true gratitude for taking this leap to pursue your dream?
Yeah, there's a picture with me and my dad at the PGA show, because he comes down with me every year. And I don't think I would have been able to get any of this stuff done without him. He loaned me money. He was my soundboard that I could throw ideas off of. You know, he makes bras. He's in the bra business, but he's a lifelong golfer. And my grandfather was a lifelong golfer. And, you know, I have my passion for golf because of him. And, you know, like winning best new product and having him down at my booth every year and taking him to trade shows where, you know, he doesn't really know a lot about my product. He gets sort of the broad strokes, but he just loves, you know, I just love seeing him there just bullshitting and talking to people and just having a fun time. That's sort of priceless.
And I guarantee you he loves seeing you in that environment as well.
Oh yeah. 100%.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I thank you, Jeff, for making some time for us today. I think you, your story is going to resonate with a lot of people, and I expect we're going to get some questions for you. And I'm wondering if you'd be interested in giving away a handful of, let's say, two or three devices for people to write to us and tell us why they're most worthy of getting a device. That'd be really cool. If not, that's okay. But if you do, we can make that available in the show notes, and people can write in.
I'll give away a dozen.
A dozen. All right. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, so there people, you go.
You know,
dozen people. What would be cool? I will, you know, what should we be asking them to tell us?
That's a great question. Why they love golf.
Okay. Let's do it. Why do you love golf? And, we're gonna raffle out, a dozen, to the first, the first dozen, not the first dozen. We're going to raffle it out because there's going to be a lot of responses. We'll raffle out and we'll give out a dozen. Jeff, it's a super pleasure to meet you. Congratulations.
Likewise.
I'm going to buy one on Amazon. You don't need to give me one. I'm anxious to try it out. I'm sure that it will probably help me quite a bit because I know exactly what you're talking about. That moment where you're standing over the damn ball and you're like, are my feet right? Am I the right angle? Is it the right position? And you get there and you doubt yourself. And you make an adjustment after you made the adjustment and then you miss.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about my product is a lot of people talk about that is if they go, I use it. And then I get over the putt and I'm like, no, it doesn't look right. And I've since creating my product and using it, I like have convinced myself. I'm like, no, you know that it's good. Trust yourself, execute. And more often than not, it actually does work.
Hey, you know what? You know that it's good. Trust yourself and execute is a hell of a, you know, that's a hell of a statement about entrepreneurship too. So it's a great way to end our interview. Jeff, thank you so much. Continued success to you. The Alignment Ball Marker, you can find it on Amazon. I believe you also have a website, right?
Yep, alignmentballmark.com and also at Alignment Ball Mark on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube. I've got tons of videos that show features the product and how it works, and you know,
awesome,
amazing. All right, congratulations and continued success, my friend.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Guys. And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube, and please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.